Some kind of lighting device shone its beam onto the globe, and the reflected glimmers scattered around, like the bright spots of laser sights. The globe rotated with staid dignity, as if it was a planet, and the flecks of light drifted across the walls. The dashing, do-or-die music was coming from upstairs, and that was where people were laughing. The entire wall above the stairway was covered by a huge banner, vibrant red, embroidered in gold. At the center of it was a crest, the globe of the earth, in an interlaced frame, with a hammer and a sickle crossed above it. A familiar symbol to anyone who had been on the Red Line. And the jolly glimmers from the mirror globe crept across that, too. Was he with the Reds? Why would the Reds nurse him back to health? A dream.
I shall be obliged to call the guards,
the lady doctor warned from somewhere behind him. Artyom set his staff on the first step and moved up a bit closer to the music. His legs were rather weak, not fully pumped up. He waited and then conquered the next step. What was this place? Slowly, narrowing his eyes, he plodded upwards. An archway started moving into view. He could see a white ceiling in it and light as bright as day. And then it surfaced from behind the steps. A hall. An immense hall. A round, bluish-white dome, with a chandelier dangling from the ceiling like an explosion of glass. The floor was soft, covered by a single continuous carpet with incredibly bright patterns. Just looking at them made him feel dizzy and sick. And there were tables, and more tables, tables everywhere, round tables laid for a meal. The tablecloths were blotchy, but they had once been white too. Plates with leftover scraps, carafes half full of something ruby red, forks lying on the floor, and people scattered about. They had clustered round some tables, abandoning others that they had eaten empty. In some places they were embracing, with their foreheads set together like Artyom and the dying political prisoner in the tunnel, only not moved by grief but by vodka. In other places they were conducting solemn conversations, strangely dressed, not with bare torsos under their jackets, but shirts, even though they were crumpled, and even ties, like in photos from before the war. As if he was invisible, Artyom set out towards them across the soft carpet, bathing his bare feet in the woolen grass. Someone looked up at him from a table with bleary surprise in his eyes. But he couldn't look for long, and slumped back into the complicated salads and half-drunk shot glasses. A ragged orchestra was blaring away on a little stage at the far end of the hall, and a pot-bellied, bandy-legged character was cavorting impetuously between the musicians to cack-handed applause from the nearest table.
Artyom!
He stopped, spotted.
Sit down, don't be shy. Well, you're not shy anyway, I can see that.
A man was looking at him and smiling. Dark hair in damp streaks across his forehead, swollen bags under his eyes with a tipsy glint in them, an unbuttoned shirt, with a balding hog, bright red in the face and hiccuping, sitting beside him.
Alexei Felixovich?
Oh, you remember me too.
I was looking for you.
Well, here you are. You found me. Artyom, this is Gennady Nikitich. Gennady Nikitich, Artyom.
Pleased to meet you,
the hog snorted. At this point it occurred to Artyom that he should cover his private parts. He suddenly started suspecting that this might not be a dream after all. The raving lunacy on all sides was beyond endurance, but in a dream it wasn't possible to think about the fact that you were asleep and you had to wake up soon. That would wake you up immediately, wouldn't it? Artyom sat down with his bare backside on a velvet chair and covered himself with a napkin. How could he interrogate Veselov in this situation? Where was his Nagant? What could he threaten Veselov with to make him tell the truth? A table knife?
How did I end up here?
He asked in order to avoid confessing about the dream.
Your friend persuaded me. Our mutual friend.
What, Sasha?
Sasha. She implored me exceedingly tearfully, and you know I'm soft-hearted by nature. Then I remembered you and how funny you are. We had quite a ball that time. My foster brother, you might say. So my heart faltered. I did pick you up off your knees, after all. Do you remember anything? I think you'd overdone it with the worms. You were a bit woozy, but you coped well with all the assignments.
How titillating.
Artyom crept a bit farther under the tablecloth. He suddenly felt very naked, shamefully, idiotically naked. Sasha had asked this ghoul to save him. They were nursing Artyom because Sasha had persuaded him.
I don't want this.
I don't need your charity handouts. Ah, there you go again. You fought stoutly that time, too, under the influence of the worm. You were going to introduce global justice, especially when we chatted about Miller. You used up two of my cigarettes getting rid of that tattoo. Don't you remember anything at all?
Where are we? Where am I right now?
We're in a bunker. No, not your heroic bunker. Don't make those eyes at me. You know, there are lots of these bunkers under Moscow. We picked one that's fairly decent, refurbished to Euro standard. The others are not so great. Some are flooded and some you can't get into at all. The doors are so rusty.
Exactly so.
The lady doctor walked up and she had the guards with her, smartly dressed in tunics as if they'd come straight from a parade. They prepared to impose order on Artyom.
Oh, come on. Are you going to take him away from me immediately?
Besolov was upset.
Let me talk to the man for a while. He probably has loads of questions.
The lady doctor agreed and went away.
Sasha got me in here?
Naked and helpless. Had she saved him?
Why, yes. The boy got a bad dose of radiation, she said, and he got it because all on his own. Alone, he guessed all of your terrible secrets. He wanted very badly to go back up on the surface, and this is where it got him. He even captured the radio station in Balashika, cut out the jammers, appealed to the people. A hero, an admirable young man.
She told you? You? Had she betrayed him? Given him away?
It wasn't only her. My own sources, too. I must confess, I underestimated you that first time. You were pretty far gone, of course. That's what I like, a little chat with one of the common people. Tell him just a little bit about how things really are and get a sniff at the smoke that starts rising from his brains. Many people here haven't been in the metro for years. But I'm curious. And then, my job means I have to associate with people.
Remarkable man,
the boar exclaimed. Are we in Moscow?
Of course we are.
A bunker? Why does it look so strange? Why are the banners Soviet? I don't understand. Is the Red Line really controlled by Hansa, or is it really Hansa that's controlled by the Red Line?
What difference does it make?
What?
Artyom frowned. The White Hall was slipping away sideways and upwards.
Well, is there any difference between the Red Line and Hansa?
Besolov smiled like quicksand.
And just you try finding 10 differences between the Reds and the Fascists.
I don't understand.
That's all right. And I'm willing to explain. Why don't we take a little stroll here? Without trousers, of course. It will be rather... Hey, waiter!
A fidgety waiter with a bow tie, grey hair and a moustache came scurrying over. Besolov ordered him to take off his trousers and shirt to dress his guest. Artyom demanded his own clothes, but he was told everything had been burned. Then he agreed to take the black and white outfit, except for the bow tie. The waiter stood to attention with his little grey-haired stomach trembling. The lady doctor disconnected the angel's blood and sealed off the puncture hole in his arm with a plaster. Alexei Felixovich got up and wiped his lips with a napkin. He cast off from the table.
Much impressed,
the boar told Artyom in farewell. They set off, exchanging greetings, through the well-liquored, drowsy guests at the feast. Konrad Vladimirich, Ivan Ivanich, Andrei Oganesovich, and all the rest of them.
Who are they? Who are these people?
Splendid people,
Besalov assured him.
The very best.
They reached the stairway.
So?
Alexei Felixovich gestured round the space.
There was a question. Why the Soviet symbolism? We reply. Previously, before everything happened, this was the premises of the Moscow Cold War Museum. A private museum, but it was located in a genuine government bunker from the time of that same Cold War. A former so-called SF, that is, a state facility. Somehow it was privatized, God knows how, during the turbulent 90s, it doesn't matter, flooded, filthy, and abandoned. Because at that time it seemed to us that these bunkers would never be needed by anyone again. And then the new owners decorated it according to their own nostalgic taste. All these banners, red stars, hammers and sickles, and so on and so forth. Basically hinting at the USSR, but Nepman style. They refurbished the place superbly, for which we are very grateful. They took it with a wooden plow and left it with an atom bomb, so to speak. They collected a curious exhibition of historical artifacts and started showing foreign tourists round. But when World War III happened, they were quickly reminded what SF stood for, and who was the real owner here, and who was just a temporary placeholder. Because anyone who has been here naturally doesn't want to go to the genuine SFs. It's all rather dingy there, without any of this pizzazz. Private hands are private hands after all. And the style is majestic, it's breathtaking. You look at that banner and you remember how our great power used to threaten the whole world. So we didn't change anything here. It's stylish and patriotic and snug.
The glimmers from the mirror globe tickled the red banner and gambled on the crest.
But the red line, they drive people against machine guns, under these flags. Right now at Komsomol station, yesterday, a week ago, a child was shot, in my arms. Not mine, but...
Well, what of it, pray tell? That's nothing to do with us.
It was you who forced Miller to give them the cartridges, wasn't it? Hansa, there at Komsomol, to Moskvin.
Artyom had finally woken up.
In the first place, we are not Hansa. In the second place, we didn't force anyone. The cartridges are ours, and the order is merely an armor delivery service. Moskvin was entitled to compensation for the actions of the Reich, and what they do with the cartridges is a matter of their ethics. But on the other hand, we stopped the war, which, moreover, began not because of the way the system is set up in general, but as a result of cretinous initiatives at the middle management level. The same, as it happens, as that time with your heroic bunker. Do you really want a civil war?
At Komsomol station, they used those cartridges to make mincemeat of all those people, live people. Why are you trying to frighten me with war? People that are starving. They're ready to storm machine guns. Can you imagine that? What that's like?
Besalov stopped talking and remained silent until they got down the steps.
But what can be done? We're trying to find a cure for the mushroom rot. We're trying pesticides. But there are certain natural processes. The ecology of the metro, so to speak. I suggest we should consider it the self-regulation of the population.
But you stuff your belly here.
You could get that impression, Besalov agreed. But it's stupid to think that the bigwigs at Polis or Moskvin or Miller don't stuff their bellies. This is a matter of rendering to Caesar. There aren't enough tinned goods in the state reserves for everyone. That's the way the world's made. If I go out of here and feed an unfortunate hungry little girl with scraps from my plate, that won't change anything. My scraps aren't Jesus's fishes. But even so, I do go out and I feed a hungry little girl, and nothing changes.
Because your Hansa is no better than the Reich. And I tell you that, in essence, Hansa is the Reich.
What? Catch up with me. Artyom hobbled after him. From the staircase with the banner, they turned to the right. A bright red star shone above their heads. A sign glowed crimson, Bunker 42. There was enough electricity for all this. All this was important. They walked along the corridor and came to an empty bar. The counter was illuminated by a Kalashnikov rifle woven out of neon tubes. There was no barman, and the opened bottles proffered themselves. Besselov pulled over something with a label that wasn't Russian, tugged out the spongy cork with his teeth, and put his lips to the bottle. He offered Artyom some, but Artyom declined fastidiously.
"And so, the Cold War Museum," said Besselov, turning into a narrow passage. Sheets of steel attached with square rivets.
They walked into the museum space. An old map on the wall lit up from below. An immense crimson shadow across half the world signed USSR. Grey little European states, huddled up against each other, and everything dotted with the stamped silhouettes of missiles and wide-winged planes. A pale mannequin standing in the corner, dressed in an old uniform, a stupid summer uniform, guarding a huge, fat bomb, painted in grey linseed oil paint.
"Here we have an amusing little exhibit, a model of the first atomic bomb developed and produced in the Soviet Union."
The bomb had a glass cap set in its nose, as if to allow people to glance into hell. But of course there was nothing in there, just some kind of device with indicators. But Artyom wasn't looking at it. He was looking at the huge map of Europe.
"It's all you, isn't it? The jammers are yours. I was looking for you just for that reason. What's it all needed for? What are we all doing stuck here, in the metro? If the whole world survived..."
"Did it really survive?"
Besselov raised his eyebrows in surprise.
"Well, all right. All right. It survived. I got you there.
All those missiles and planes on the map. That's old stuff, right? It even still says the USSR, not Russia. How old is this map, 100 years? There aren't any enemies after all, right? Those enemies that Miller is afraid of, the ones these jammers are there for. The war ended. Back then. Right?"
"It's all very subjective, Artyom. Perhaps for some it's still going on."
"They're not planning, the West, to do anything to us. Right? Go and pull the wool over Miller's eyes with that one."
"Everyone believes what's most convenient for him."
"Then what's it for? The jammers, what did you put them up for? Why kill people coming from the other cities? To make it look like the whole world was bombed to pieces? What for? To make it look like we're alone? Then why are we stuck here in the metro?"
"Because," said Alexei Felixovich, shedding all his playfulness like a viper shedding his skin, "outside the metro, we will no longer be a people. We will stop being a great nation."
"What?"
"I'll try to explain that too, and you stop yelling and try to listen. And by the way, we didn't put up the jammers. They're old, from Soviet times. What quality! In the 90s they were simply rented out to businessmen to broadcast music temporarily."
The old waiter's outfit hung loose and baggy on Artyom. Somewhere behind him a security guard harrumphed to indicate his presence. Alexei Felixovich took a handkerchief with initials in the corner out of his breast pocket and ran it over the bomb, wiping off the dust.
"But I think we'll start with this beauty here.
Why do you want this thing here? Artyom felt disgusted. It was as if Besalov was kissing a dead person on the lips.
Oh, come now. One needs to know one's roots.
Besalov turned towards him and smiled.
And so we don't touch anything at all here. This bomb is the primogenitor of our sovereignty.
Alexei Felixovich stroked the bomb's immense paunch.
Essentially, it's only thanks to this that we were able to defend ourselves against encroachments from the West, to defend our unique social order, our civilization. If our scientists had not created it, the country would have been brought to its knees after the Second World War. Well, and after that...
So that in World War III we could get hit with it and...
World War III?
Alexei Felixovich interrupted.
In number three, we got a bit carried away. Too caught up, so to speak, in our own television truth. Man is good at that sort of thing in general, at substituting illusion for reality, and living in a world of complete make-believe. A useful quality, in principle. The entire metro, for instance, manages quite splendidly in this system of imaginary coordinates.
The entire metro manages quite splendidly? Artyom asked, moving closer to him.
What I mean is that everything works. Everyone is drawn in, involved. On the Red Line they believe that they're fighting Hansa and the fascists. The people in the Reich believe that they're battling against the Reds and the Freaks. The people in Hansa frighten their children with Moskvin and inform on their neighbors as Red Spies. As if it all really existed.
As if I was there.
Artyom suddenly felt he couldn't breathe in this museum.
I was in the tunnel, between Pushkin and Kuznetsky Most. That bloody slaughter between the Reds and the Fascists baited dozens of people into fighting, real, live people. They hacked each other to death there with pickaxes and knives, metal bars. That really happened, got that, you scum? It really happened.
I sympathize. But what does that prove? Who was killed there? Reds? Fascists? No. A certain number of genetically damaged individuals on one side, and a certain number of saboteurs and blabbermouths on the other. A controlled conflict, and a highly original mode of auto-purification, if you take a detached view of it. As if our system was a living organism. Cells that hinder survival die off and peel away. But let me repeat, we did not start that war. The mid-level command of the Reich's intelligence service attacked the Red Line in order to curry favor with their leadership, without having even the slightest idea that neither the Red Line nor the Reich actually exist.
What do you mean they don't exist?
Well, that is, of course they exist, the names exist. It's very important for people to call themselves something, to believe that they are someone. It's very important to them to fight against someone. And we accommodate them. We don't have a totalitarian state here, and we offer them the widest possible product range. If you want to massacre freaks, the Iron Legion is recruiting. If you're dreaming of free rations and a common cause, run to the Red Line. If you don't believe in anything and just want to do business, emigrate to Hansa. Are you an intellectual? Fantasize about the Emerald City and wear a hole in the seat of your pants in police. A convenient system, you see. I already tried to din that into your head back at Svetnoy Boulevard. Why do you want to go up on top? We can provide you with freedom here. What do you want with the surface?
Alexei Felixovich stopped at the way out, ran his glance round the bomb's shrine, and turned out the light. Artyom was still thinking about how to answer.
So you're not from Hansa? All this isn't Hansa?
From what Hansa?
Besalov shook his head.
I told you. There isn't any Hansa, all right? There is the Circle Line, and there are people who think that they live in Hansa.
Where are you from, then?
Why, from here?
Alexei Felixovich raised his eyes to the vaulted ceiling, assembled out of tunnel liners.
From this very place. To be even more precise, from that room over there. Catch up with me.
They came out into a little room with a parquet floor and a desk, with a green lamp burning on it. A security post. The sentry on duty, wearing an officer's uniform, got up and saluted. Someone's reception area. Escalator steps leading up to the next intermediate level, a replica. It was like a room from a different time, not from the pretentious 2000s, but from times that seemed to be ancient but had never actually ticked by in reality. They walked up the steps and there was a door. An office. Bookshelves with glass doors, crammed with weighty volumes. A dais or podium in the middle of the room, and a nomenclatura desk in the corner of it. Like Sphinolops or Miller's, a man sitting at the desk. Motionless, lounging back and looking up at the ceiling. Eyes with a plastic glitter. In a tunic with gold stars on the shoulder straps. A bushy black moustache. Hair combed across the head. That's...
Yosef Vissarionovich. Delightful, isn't he?
Stalin?
A life-size dummy of Stalin. Wax. You can take a look.
Tangled up in this dream, Artyom obediently stepped up onto the podium. Stalin had put his boneless hands on the desk. A pen protruded out of one waxy fist, as if the dummy leader was about to sign some decree. The other hand was spread out on its flat palm, with the fingers extended forward. Below the moustache was a smile, carved out with a knife, unwavering. Beside his hand lay unfading rag roses. Unable to resist, Artyom touched Stalin on the nose. Stalin couldn't care less. He couldn't care less that he had died and been resurrected. Couldn't care less that now he was a dummy, that he had escaped at such a price. When the world had been reduced to dust, couldn't care less if they laid flowers at his feet or tweaked his nose. Stalin was in an excellent mood. Everything was fine as far as Stalin was concerned.
As large as life, eh?
Said Bezalov.
Is he from the museum, too, an exhibit?
Artyom walked over to a bookcase, raked the dust off the glass with his finger, and looked at the shelves. They were crammed with one and the same book, repeated a nonsensical number of times. Printed on the spine of every one was J.V. Stalin, Collected Works, Volume 1.
What's it for?
Artyom looked round at Bezalov.
Stalin's office was here when it was a genuine bunker. Although the guides say that Stalin never did spend any time sitting in here, he passed away before the facility was commissioned. But they made an effigy for the Western tourists and licked the office into shape. Stalin was already here when we moved into the bunker. And we preserved everything. One must respect the history of one's people.
Alexei Felixovich clambered up onto the dais, moved over to Stalin, sat down on Stalin's desk, and dangled his legs.
Continuity. There he is and here we are. It turns out, as it were, that he built this bunker for us. He was thinking of our future. A great leader.
Apart from the moustached portraits on the red line, Artyom hadn't encountered Stalin before. What did he feel when he touched the great leader on the nose? Wax.
Why continuity? The continuity's on the red line.
Artyom. Come on, Artyom.
Bezalov tut-tutted.
Let me spoon-feed you, then. The red line. Hansa. The Reich. They're dummies, too. Of course, they simulate independence, competition, and struggle. They even actually fight when they get carried away.
So who are you, then?
Alexei Felixovich chuckled.
It's an elegant sort of thing. A multi-party system. Like a hydra. Choose a head that suits you and fight the other heads. Believe that an enemy head is a dragon. Conquer it. But what about the heart?
Veselov stroked the desk and gestured round the office with his chin.
This is the heart. You can't see it, and you don't know a thing about it. And if I hadn't shown it to you, you would have carried on fighting against the head. If not the Red Line, then Hansa.
Artyom moved away from the bookcase and walked up close to Veselov.
Won't you regret that you ever showed me?
Veselov didn't back away or move aside. He wasn't afraid of Artyom, as if he wasn't in Artyom's dream. But Artyom was in his.
Go and tell someone that you were here. Even that Miller of yours. What will he say to you? He'll say it's sheer lunacy.
Artyom gulped. Had he really confessed that, too, in his drunken state?
Why? Hasn't he been here?
Of course not. Why let everyone in here? This is a temple. A sanctuary.
What about me?
What about you? You're a holy fool, Artyom. God's fools can enter the temple. They are even shown miracles.
Suddenly it clicked.
The invisible observers.
Louder.
The invisible observers.
There now. Look at that. You're not so hopeless after all.
But that's just a tall story, a myth, like the Emerald City.
Precisely,
Veselov agreed.
A tall story. A fairy tale.
Everything collapsed ages and ages ago. It didn't even hold up for a month, the state. And then there was chaos. And since then, everybody knows that. The children know it. No one governs us. We're here all on our own, alone. The invisible observers are a myth.
But how do you know that they're a myth? We were the ones who told you that. Do you understand? We immediately gave you a ready-made image that you could fit us into. You're a simple soul, after all. You think with your heart, not your head. In images. Well, all right, I'll spoon out the cliches for you. Help yourself. The invisible observers. Opla! On the one hand, you definitely don't believe in me, but on the other, it's as if you already know everything about me. Rumors. Better than television.
But you, the previous leaders, that is, the government, the president, you were evacuated beyond the Urals, weren't you? The system of government fell apart. The state...
Just think about it. Why would we move beyond the Urals? Why would we move to some separate bunker at the far end of the world, out in the cold, all on our own? What would we do there? Eat each other? Our place is with the people.
He stretched, looking like a well-fed cat.
And where were you all the time? When we were eating shit? When we were throttling each other? When we were dying up there on top because of you? Where were you?
Right beside you. We were always beside you. Just on the other side of the wall.
That can't be possible.
I told you. It works. You can't booze away real skill.
Veselov got down off the desk and took a pull at his amber-colored bottle.
What are we doing stuck in here? Come on, I'll show you how we live. Rather ascetically, by the way, so you won't go getting any ideas.
He carefully hoisted up the slumping Stalin and stepped down off the podium. Artyom lingered, glutted with all this knowledge.
You bastards.
But what did we do?
Alexei Felixovich asked.
On the contrary, minimal intervention. We are merely observers.
And invisible ones, at that. Only if the system starts keeling over, then we have to straighten it up.
The system? People are so hungry they eat their own children.
So what?
Besselov shot a hostile glance at Artyom.
We're not the ones who like to eat your children. You're the ones who like doing that, and we don't like the fact that you eat your own children. We just like governing you, but if we want to govern you, we are obliged to allow you to eat your own children.
Lies.
You stuck us in here and you keep us here. You treat people like pigs, stool pigeons everywhere. Some have a security service, some have the KGB, some have... There are Svinolops everywhere. It's true, there is no difference between the Reich and all the rest.
And that's because our Russian man can't be managed any other way.
Besselov replied sternly.
That's the way nature made him. Loosen the screws a bit and you get rebellion. He needs constant watching. What was all that business of yours at Komsomol Station? Look at them. They demanded their rights. They rebelled. How did it all end? In a bloodbath. And has that undermined the Red Line? Not in the least. Why, the security services are a God-given gift to our Russian men. He's riotous by nature. Those machine guns of yours, why, they pressed up as close as they could to the machine guns jostling into the front row. But the patient ones survived. At least that's some kind of selection process. And how else can our man be governed? He has to be distracted all the time, restrained, channeled, so to speak. He needs to have some kind of idea foisted on him, religion or ideology. He needs to have enemies invented for him all the time. He can't live without enemies. He's completely at a loss without them. He can't define himself. He knows nothing about himself. We had really excellent enemies in reserve 2 years ago. The Dark Ones. You couldn't possibly invent a better external threat than them. They scrabbled about on the surface. They were coal black, without even any whites in their eyes. Like devils. And they filled our Russian man with horror and loathing. Wonderful enemies. Everything's clear immediately. If they're black, then we're white. We were saving them for a rainy day, the threat to mankind scenario. But no, some imbecile appeared and wound up that old fool from the Order, and they went and bombarded our pet devils with missiles in their own safari park. Can you imagine that? Yes. We tried to intervene via the Council of Police. We hinted that there wasn't any danger from the Dark Ones as yet. Basically, the scenario just got bogged down. We had to domesticate that Miller of yours, too. I'd chop hands off for initiatives at the local level. If we had a dictatorship, are you coming?
Shell-shocked and crushed, Artyom plodded after Besselov. They walked past the sentry, who jumped up again and saluted again. Then they found themselves in a narrow passage, with their steps echoing hollowly on an iron floor. They passed the turnoff where the restaurant was located. A bright glimmer from the mirror globe darted straight out into Artyom's eye. The globe was spinning like Artyom's head. Once there was a broad sheet of mirror, and the reflection of the whole world fitted into it. But the mirror had been smashed to smithereens and glued onto hell knows what. And now they were lashing at it with a searchlight for the amusement and beauty of it. They passed the turn and carried on.
How did you get a grip on him? How did you get a grip on all of them?
Artyom asked obtusely.
Did you buy them? Moskvin? The Fuhrer?
Well, no. I can't generalize about that. There's a right approach to every man. Moskvin values money, and he poisoned his cousin. And Yevgeny Petrovich, for instance, has a little daughter growing up with no fingers. She was born like that. A sentimental man. He passed all those laws about the fight against deformity, and he can't observe them himself. And we send him some photos. Here you are, Yevgeny Petrovich. And here is your little daughter in your arms, and your wife beside you. So there can't be any doubt. So play by the rules, Yevgeny Petrovich, and play with gusto, because your citizens have to believe you. Not even a single one of your very lousiest citizens must doubt that your Reich is absolutely the most authentic of Reichs. He must be prepared to give his life for the Reich.
There isn't any Reich any longer. It gobbled itself up, digested itself, and shat itself out. And your Führer bolted.
And we'll bring him back and plant him there again, and we'll arrange a new Reich for him, better than the previous one. We've already picked up his wife and daughter, and the Führer will be reeled in.
Why do that? He's an absolute monster.
Because, you droll little man, we are accustomed to working with Yevgeny Petrovich, and we know how to do it. The incriminating evidence hasn't been disclosed yet. Why should we look for a new man? Find out about his weaknesses, lure him with the bait and sink in the hook, when there's such a wonderful, ready-made option. He messed things up, is true. Well, we'll penalize him for that. Where would we be without the Reich?
They're all scumbags there. Animals. Some are animals and some are cowards.
The animals aren't only there, but right throughout the metro. And look what a wonderful, beautiful enclosure has been built for them. And the animals crawl into it themselves from all over. The Iron Legion and so on and so forth. To fight the freaks. To let off steam. If there's no Reich, where will they go to? Think about the people. No, let them go and fight for the Reich, or for the Red Line, or for the Order. Choose what suits your taste. Freedom. There it is. That's freedom.
That's not what people need.
Yes, it is. Precisely that. So they won't be bored. So they'll have something to keep themselves busy. So they'll have a choice. We have a genuine self-sufficient world here, under the ground, and we don't need any other world up on the surface.
I need it.
Well, so you need it, but no one else does.
Maybe they have family up there. If only for that, at least.
Their families are all here now, and really and truly I can't understand you. All you did was damage your health. They barely managed to revive you, you little fool. What is it that you're looking for up there?
We were born on the surface. Our place is up there, in the open air. You breathe differently up there and think differently. There aren't enough directions here for me. Here, there's only forwards and backwards. I feel cramped here. Can you grasp that? Don't you feel that yourself?
No. You know, it's quite the opposite for me. I feel dizzy outside. I immediately want to come back down into the bunker, into the coziness. Right. This is our accommodation block. Little apartments.
They turned a corner, into an immense, blind tunnel, 10 meters across that ran from one point in the middle of the ground to another point somewhere in the middle of the ground. How many more of them were there here? The passageway ran on farther. It was obviously late. The inhabitants of the bunker were straggling away, blousy and fuzzy from the snow-white drinking joint and creeping off home. Artyom glanced through the door jams into one of the apartments lined up along the tunnel, then into another one. Yes, really quite cozy. Good enough for a human being.
Why are you showing all this to me? Saying all this?
Well, you know, I enjoy it. A bit of an argument. You're a revolutionary, aren't you? What were you doing sitting there at Sashka's place, waiting for me? A romantic. Did you want to shoot me with your revolver? What, did you think that if you killed me that would straighten out people's lives? What do I do? I'm only in charge of domestic policy. Waste me and a new head will grow. I tried to talk some sense into you back there at Svetnoy Boulevard, but you see, your memory has failed you.
At Svetnoy?
As I said, loss of memory. But that's not surprising. It's essentially symbolic. This amnesia of yours is a blessing to us, of course. No one remembers anything. A people of ephemeral mayflies. It's as if yesterday never happened, and no one wants to think about it tomorrow. A single continuous present moment.
What tomorrow? How can you plan tomorrow when there's barely enough chow for today? And that's if you're one of the lucky ones.
Now that's where our skill comes in. There should always only be enough chow for today, and always just barely enough. An empty stomach brings dream about comprehensible things. One has to be able to keep a balance, let people stuff themselves, and they get indigestion and their self-importance escalates, underdo the chow, and they smash the structures of power. Well, or what they understand by power. Will you drink to our skill with me?
No.
What's wrong? You should drink more. The salvation of the people lies in vodka, and it helps with the radiation, by the way.
Thanks for the reminder. The pure, alien blood crept through Artyom's veins as viscously as gel, stinging and confusing him. Artyom would have preferred to have his own thin, dirty, poisoned blood back. Anything not to be indebted to these scumbags. Even if he only had one more week to live, at least he could burn out his own life and not parade about with a borrowed one.
You talk like that about the people, but you, yourself, where are you from?
Yes. It might have sounded as if I don't like the people, or I despise them, but quite the contrary, my heart lies completely with them. I love them. Do you believe me? Look, I go out into the people like that, get to know people and mingle with them. The way I got to know you. Simply loving the people, one has to understand everything about them. And one has to be honest. One mustn't delude oneself. Yes, that's what our people are like. One has to feel the kind of people one is governing. One has to love one's own people. One has to edify them. Catch the demons.
You govern? Who governs?
Eloy governing Morlocks, is it?
Are you some kind of aristocrat, then?
Me?
Besselov smiled.
What sort of damned aristocrat am I? The aristocracy were all shot way back when. I'm not even from Moscow. I started out as a TV journalist. The food wasn't so good, so I became a political technologist, and things spiraled on up from there. So I'm bone of the bone and flesh of the flesh through and through.
Artyom had a sudden realization. Let their gel flow through his veins. This was the very respite that would give him the time to do something. He looked around. There weren't so very many guards here. He had to walk through the entire bunker, of course. What if there was a military base in one of the tunnels? Who provided the force to back their power?
What's over that way?
Let's go take a look, if you like. In the third tunnel we have a storage depot, and the fourth is just standing bare and empty. The businessmen didn't get it refurbished before the war, and we haven't had time to do it. What, are you wondering what's the smartest way you could grab all this from us?
Besselov winked at him.
I could take you on as an apprentice, if you like. You only have to ask.
I don't think you've explained to me yet why I should hang around here, don't you understand? It may be better or worse, but it's all under the ground in the metro. What's the fucking point of that? When there are entire cities up on the surface. Forests. Fields. The ocean. Fuck it.
They reached the end. An immense, empty tunnel flooded with rusty water. Nowhere further to go. a pump droned, siphoning the phlegm out of his throat.
But how do you know what's up there, eh? Maybe it's all exactly the same as here, only without a ceiling. Well, so there's something on the radio. Does that give them paradise? Freedom? Fraternal love? Don't make me laugh. They wander across the face of the earth, turning wild one by one without any authorities, without any state, forgetting how to read and how to write. I was talking to you about exceptionality. It's this metro makes us exceptional. 50,000 people in one place. Only with a concentration like that is it possible to preserve civilization and culture. Only in that way. Yes, in the metro. So what? Up there in the fresh air, they'll become brutalized more rapidly. They'll forget more rapidly what it means to be human. Up there, on the surface, there'll be Neanderthals, polygamists, Zoroasters. But the people, the spiritual, rational people, will be here.
Spiritual? And who eats their own children?
Well, Robinson Crusoe didn't win Friday of human flesh instantaneously. We simply don't try to rush things, but sooner or later...
But why don't you let us choose for ourselves, whether we live on the surface or under it? Why didn't you ask us?
We have asked. Besalov smiled. And we're still asking.
You've got nothing to feed them with. There's the mushroom disease. Let them go. Then at least they won't all starve to death here.
Our great people have survived worse trials than this. They'll get by somehow. Do you know how hardy they are? It's fucking crazy.
Let them go up there. At least give them a chance.
Up there? Do you think there's a land flowing with milk and honey up there? You've been there? In Balashika, for instance? What is there for them to eat?
They'll find a way to feed themselves.
You bloody romantic. Why the hell am I wasting my time on a fool like you?
Well, let me go then. I didn't ask to be saved. For people like you to...
And what then? Do you think that if I let you out, the entire metro will immediately rise up to support you? That you'll cast us off, tell people the truth, and lead them off up to the surface, and everything there will be different from here?
It will.
Off you go, then.
Alexei Felixovich said indifferently.
Go ahead. I'll even give you back your revolutionary nagant.
No one there will believe you.
Just as you didn't believe me. Do you realize at least that you'll simply be telling everyone the tall tale about the invisible observers? Get real, Artyom.
Artyom nodded. He smiled.
We'll see about that.
Chapter 21 Comrades. They took the bag off his head. And he looked. But even without looking, he'd already guessed from the voices where they'd brought him. To Tsvetnoy Boulevard station. To the same place they'd taken him from. They'd dragged him all the way from the bunker with a sack over his head so that he couldn't find the way back. They unfastened the handcuffs, tugged the shapeless robe up over his head, and gave him a kick up the backside. Then the blue finished revolver fell beside him with a clang. The first thing Artyom did was grab it. Empty. He turned round, but his escorts had already vanished into the crowd. He caught a brief glimpse of two grey human grains, before they were buried under the rest of the grey sand. They'd flung him out of the bunker immediately, without wasting any time. Just as he was, still dressed in the waiter's outfit. The lady doctor only had time to stuff some kind of tablets or other into the pocket of his trousers with the razor-sharp creases. A kind soul. Then the sack went over his head. He sat down and thought for a while. People were copulating all around, giving it everything they'd got, because they had to live somehow. And now Artyom had to live somehow with all the things he had learned inside his frail plywood brain pan. The new knowledge pressed against the inside of the millimeter-thick walls. Artyom couldn't accept it. There couldn't be any reconciliation. It was impossible to believe that everything that was happening in the Metro, the living hell, the dark hopelessness and senselessness, had really been arranged that way by someone, and that it had all suited someone perfectly well. The appalling thing wasn't that people were mixed together with earth to fill in tunnels, but that without all this, the world couldn't carry on. It would collapse and crumble into the ground. It was impossible to understand a world arranged like that. And it was impossible to forgive it. He sat there looking at somebody's bare white backside, pumping away and arguing with it, as if it was Besseloff's face. He told it everything that he hadn't been quick-witted enough to tell Besseloff.
Of course, if you lie to people for so many years, how can they tell the truth from? If you make them bend them down over a trough of swill all the time, but that doesn't mean they can't straighten up and look upwards, or at least forwards. Of course, that's the way you've arranged things, but that doesn't mean they can't do it themselves. Or they don't want to. You say you ask them, and you stick the right answers down their throats. They ask.
Arguing with the backside was easy. The backside didn't offer any objections.
But what do people understand? You're the ones who should be obliterated. That bunker of yours. Scattered. If the abscess isn't lanced, then nothing. You fat rats should be taken by the scruff of the neck and shown to the people. You tried talking like that in front of people. About them. As if they were dumb cattle. And then we'll see all of them in the bunker. They're stinking bastards. I'll scatter the lot of them. If they don't believe me, they'll believe you. I'll make you tell them everything. And if you don't, I'll blast you with this here gun. We're not the only ones who have backs to our heads. Bastards.
He squeezed the handle of the empty Nagant in his hand. He couldn't do something like this alone. Nothing could be done alone. He only had a small team. But he did have one. Letyaga, Homer, Leocha. He could get them together. They already knew half the truth, and he could tell them the other half.
Ask them.
Together they could come up with a way to find that rat's nest and rip it open. How much time had gone by? A week or more? Everyone had probably wandered off throughout the Metro, hunkered down in the cracks and crannies. One so that Miller wouldn't find him, another so that Hansa wouldn't find him. But as for Homer, there wasn't any more Reich. Maybe Homer knew where to look for the others, and he knew where to look for Homer. He got up. He strode off, elbowing aside the men lined up for some lovey-doving with numbers on their hands, past the dried-off fascists, past the sluts of every possible caliber, past the frightened adolescents who had come to discover love, past the scorched stalkers who wanted at least to take a look, past the villains who had been raped by life and now needed to rape life through women, past all of them who were just beginning or already finishing their life of manhood in the underground world. Where was Sasha's cubbyhole here?
He found it.
He walked in without knocking, jumping the queue, smashed some trouserless fighting cock over the head with the butt of his Nagant, dragged him off Sashenka, and dumped him in the corner. And after that he said hello, turning away so that she could wrap herself up.
Where's Homer?
You can't stay here, Artyom.
She looked up at him.
Why have you come back?
Where's the old man? He hasn't stopped pestering you, has he? Or has he? Where has he gone?
They took him away. Please, go.
They took him? Who took him?
You... Did he help you? Alexei, did he help? You look different. Better.
He helped me. You helped me. Thanks a fucking heap. To everyone, all my benefactors.
You wanted to find out. Now you have, right? Or what did you want? Just to die?
Yes. I'm sorry. I don't want anything from him. From them. It's a charity handout. I don't want it. I didn't. But now... Now, thanks anyway.
Why did you leave them? It's a completely different life there, isn't it?
You mean you've never been there? He hasn't taken you there?
He promised. He's going to, but I asked him to take you instead of me for the time being.
You haven't missed anything. Life's exactly the same down there, only with better chow.
Well, and the medical treatment, too.
You mean you could have gone there? With them?
What did he tell you about?
He told me about everything. Everything. The invisible observers, the powers that be, the Reds, the fascists, everything.
And he let you go?
Yes.
You have to go away. They picked up all your friends. That broker of yours, everybody. The same day that you... Maybe they're not alive any longer, I don't know.
Who? The observers?
No, not his people. Your order.
The order? Listen. You... I'm trying to understand. He explained everything to you, right? You knew everything. About the surface, about the world, but... That was your dream, wasn't it? To go back up there. Just like it was mine, so that we could all... Up there. Again. Up there. You told me about it. Yourself. What are you doing here? Why are you hanging about in this cesspit? Why haven't you made your getaway? Why are you here?
Sasha stood there in front of him, as delicate as a pencil sketch, hugging herself. She gave him a sullen look.
Go away. Really?
He grabbed hold of her twig-thin wrists.
Tell me. I want to get the people to rise up. You ask me why I didn't stay there, because everyone else... Us. All of us here. They have to know. All of them. They must know. You won't betray me again. To him. You won't give me away.
I won't betray you.
Her lips seemed to seal themselves after that. Artyom waited.
But I won't go with you.
Why?
Artyom, I love him.
Who?
Alexei.
Him? That old fart? That pervert? But he's got no soul. You should hear what he says about people. You love him?
Yes.
Artyom released her arms from his scorched fingers and recoiled.
You can't.
I love him.
She shrugged her muffled shoulders.
He's like a magnet for me. He's a magnet and I'm an iron filing. That's all. He's my master. And he has always been kind to me from the very beginning.
He loans you out to be used. You. He likes to watch when you and all kinds of... Filthy. All kinds.
Yes.
Sasha nodded.
He enjoys that. And I like it, too.
You like it?
So what? Doesn't that suit you either? Like Homer? Then I'm sorry.
And you're waiting? Waiting for him to take you there, to join him?
One place became free there. He got permission. But I...
Okay, I get it. Instead of yourself, you sent me. I understand, okay?
You have to go.
Do you really want to go there? To him? To that 24-hour drinking den? To the bunker? Instead of going up? Going even deeper?
I don't care where I go. I want to be with him. I'm his, and that's all.
Okay. I understand.
He stood there for a little longer. Then he took the cross off his neck and threw it to her. See you. Thanks.
See you.
He walked out. A topsy-turvy, tumbling world. He plodded through the lewd, ephemeral, drunken crowd. He told Sasha that he understood, but he hadn't understood a thing. How could she? With Besselov. How could she possibly love someone like that? How could she swap her airships, even for the dream of the bunker? or for the brothel for the sake of brief, condescending, bawdy house assignations. Besseloff brought her his leftover scraps of food from the bunker, and his leftover scraps of love, too. But she didn't mind that. Both kinds of scraps were enough for her. She wasn't spoiled. What did Artyom really understand about Sasha? And could he even hate her?
"Hey, waiter,"
someone reached out towards his lackey's outfit.
"A liter of hooch.
Go fuck yourself." He came out of the quayside. The water was high right up to the brim. He had to smash it. Smash everything. Smash it all to fuck. So Miller had taken all his comrades from him. Homer, Leocha, Lethyaga. Artyom had to free them if they were alive. He couldn't do anything alone. Miller. If he could just win the Order over onto his side. With a force like that, he could even go up against the Observers. The Order had defended a bunker. It could storm one. But how could he stir them up, tell them about the way their comrades had been sold? But it was Miller who sold them, and who too? He'd been bought and sold himself, the old idiot, and the boys had all simply been killed senselessly because of an initiative at the middle management level. Did the old man himself realize what he had given his legs for? What if Artyom told him, explained? What did he know about the Metro, Sviatoslav Konstantinovich? What Besseloff had ladled out for him? He'd probably had half the truth stuffed down his throat, too. There was no way a hero could feel happy about changing into a roly-poly toy in a wheelchair, and not even in order to save the Metro, but because he hadn't been trusted with the second half of the truth. A plastic bottle raft was bobbing about at the far end of the platform, with a drunken railway man sound asleep beside it. Artyom looked round and gathered his thoughts. Sail through the flooded Reich. It couldn't be flooded right up to the ceiling, could it? And he'd be at police. Demand to talk to Miller, tell Miller everything that he didn't know, give him the rest of the truth. If Miller didn't come over to Artyom's side, at least he could let Artyom's people go. As he walked towards the raft, he picked up a big fat lamp in some whorehouse. Not a torch, but at least it would provide some sort of glimmer in the tunnel. He sneaked up to the raft and prodded the sleeping man with the toe of his lackey's shoe, like a log. He untied the flimsy vessel, jumped onto it, and set off into the pipe on the murky water. Instead of an oar, a ladle on a stick. Row with it on one side, then on the other. The raft was swung round on the water. It was reluctant to go back, but it crept into the blackness anyway. The lamp only lit up one step ahead. Even the ladle reached further than that. The tunnel ran downwards and the water rose upwards. The ceiling sank lower, getting close to the top of Artyom's head. Would there be enough air? He couldn't row standing up any longer. The ceiling wouldn't let him, so he had to sit down. A rat swam towards him, delighted to see dry land. It clambered onto Artyom's raft and sat on the edge modestly. He didn't drive it away. He used to be afraid of rats, but he had gotten used to them a long time ago. Rats were just rats. Shit was just shit. Darkness was just darkness. A life, like everyone else's. And he wouldn't even have noticed. Just as no one else noticed, if he didn't know there could be a different kind of life. The lamp was the hanging kind. It tried to look not only forwards, but down under the transparent hull. Something splashed down there. He thought about Sasha, saying goodbye to her. Why didn't Sasha want to tell people that they didn't have to stay stuck under the ground? Why was she here herself? What made her prefer Besseloff? There was a stink of pig fat. The rat breathed with relish. A drowned man turned over under the raft and goggled at the lamp through the wall of bottles with his open eyes clogged with sand. He hadn't seen light for a long time and was trying to remember what it was. He clutched at the raft from below with his fat fingers, hindering its passage, then let it go. The ceiling moved even lower. Squatting down on his haunches, Artyom could reach the ribs of the ceiling with his hand now. The rat thought for a moment or two and leapt into the water. It swam towards Svetnoy Boulevard, after all, to its own kind. Artyom stopped. He looked back. Everything was just as dark there, even darker, in fact. He fumbled at his chest with one hand, but he had given the little cross back. Okay, he'd manage somehow. He asked without it. And rode on. And then the water started receding. Maybe he'd gotten past a hollow, a deep spot. The ceiling stopped pressing down on him and moved upwards, letting him breathe. Light glimmered up ahead. The light bulbs that had climbed right up under the ceiling were trying to blink on. Apparently the generators had been protected against the flood somehow. When he reached the station, the water turned really shallow. On the platform, it was only knee-deep, but the owners were in no hurry to come back home just yet. Those who hadn't escaped were bloating dejectedly at a loose end. There was an intense stench that Artyom could feel all over his face. The groundwaters had washed out Darwin Station, and it had become Chekhov again. All of its cannibalistic trappings, the banners, the murals, the portraits, were floating belly up in the liquid mud. Never mind. They'd summon up their courage and put their house in order. They'd rebuild the menagerie. Dietrich would be there instead of Dietmar, but that was all. Yevgeny Petrovich would come back, one of the family, part of the system, even if he was a monster. Because everything had already been set up so gloriously and conveniently. This is where the little people climb in, and this is where the minced meat comes out. Like out at Balashika, like everywhere in the metro. And of course, someone would have to finish writing the history textbook for Evgeny Petrovich. Ilya Stepanovich, probably. The teacher would have to carry the can alone, since Miller had gobbled up Homer. Never mind. Ilya Stepanovich would spell out everything the way it had to be. At Schiller, he'd have a heroic defense of the station against the Reds, and the freaks at the station wouldn't be defending but attacking. Yes, and then some kind of soulful, uplifting finale. About the Reich being flooded due to the nefarious scheming of enemies, but not broken, and a phoenix would rise from the ashes, better than the one before. How could Sasha sleep with this going on? He scattered a skin of sodden paper with his ladle. Looking closer,